Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
When you think about, from a guy's perspective, marriage wasn't such a great deal. You know, it raised household size, but it didn't bring in a lot more income.
We found that increasingly women are more likely to marry husbands who have lower education levels than they do and lower income levels than they do. And the reverse is true for men.
That's Richard Fry and Devira Cohn of the Pew Research Center talking about a new survey on the economics of marriage. Women marry down. Men marry up economically. And it's even more and more true as time goes by. Women better educated generally than their husbands, not to a person, but generally, and increasingly earning more than their husbands. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. So what does this mean for the economics of marriage? We're going to talk about that with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute here for the first few minutes of this hour of Issues Etc. A little bit later, we'll discuss the discovery of the earliest known Hebrew writing. Dr. Andrew Steinman will be our guest. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 19th of January. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us at @IssuesETC. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities, and she's author of the book Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Todd.
Does anything concern you with the discovery that women generally, for lack of a better word, marry down educationally, perhaps now even in terms of potential income?
Well, you know, it does concern me a little bit. I took a look at that Pew report that they were referencing there on the NPR segment that you just played, and you know, they talk about, you know, Pew's nice and neutral. They're not cheerleading for this trend. They're pretty much just reporting. But the thing they don't report on, Todd, is whether this is making people happy. Are people happy with this situation? And I know from other research that women generally feel they have good marriages when they are stay-at-home moms and when their husbands earn more than they do. The whole idea of egalitarianism that has been promoted by so many feminists and so many elitists in our culture, that in fact doesn't make people that happy. If you actually look at people and say, are you happy in your marriage, and then track those answers with the different kinds of living arrangements that they have, married mothers in particular tend to be happiest when their husbands earn more than they do and when they have the opportunity to stay at home with their kids and or work part time. So it's a big question mark that they left out of that whole analysis of women marrying down, as you put it.
Okay, someone listens to what you have to say, in particular your response to the last question, and says you are just obviously stuck in the past. I mean, women are in the workplace; they will be in the workplace sooner or later. Women will perhaps, by and large, out-earn their husbands, and as to happiness, maybe women are happier being the primary breadwinners. And it sounds like you're advocating for a return to the days where women depended upon the greater income of their husbands.
Well, Todd, I'm saying the data tell us that women are happier. when they're interdependent with their husbands, and when their husbands are emotionally involved with them. That's what this data tells you. And so, you know, this is kind of the feminist dream come true is what's happening here. You know, I've always told you the definition of feminism is that men and women are equal, except women are better. And now that's where we are. We've pumped so much energy and attention into you go girl kind of programs, so that girls feel like they're welcome in the workplace, and they feel like they're welcome in the higher education and so on. And we've driven the guys out. I mean, you know, women are now outperforming men in higher education in pretty much every area, with the exception of the math and hard sciences. Pretty much every other area, women are getting more undergraduate degrees, women are getting more graduate degrees. And so what that means is that for the educated woman, they're going to have to marry down, or they're going to not get married. I mean, that's pretty much what the choices are going to amount to. And so this is the feminist fantasy. It's come true, okay? And so we're entitled to ask, well, gosh, we thought it was all going to be equal. You know, that you were going to marry somebody just like yourself, and you were going to do all the same things and all make the same contribution. Well, gee, that didn't seem to work out. We still seem to be having some kinds of inequality even inside the home. What's going on with that? Well, what's going on with that is that when people form a household, they're looking for complementarity with one another. You're really not supposed to be out marrying a clone of yourself. You're looking for somebody who brings something to the table that you don't have, and somebody to whom you can contribute something. You know, so the idea of equality had a problem in it from the very beginning, if you think about the purpose of forming a household, say. And so now we've gotten to the point where because of the aggressive promotion of women's opportunities and the sort of either setting aside of men or the active discouragement of men, we've got an imbalance going in the opposite direction. And the question is this going to make us happy? And I think there's already reason to think that it's not going to make us happy. And if we go further down the pike, I think it'll only get worse. Now, the other feature of this that we haven't mentioned yet, Todd, is that why is it that women are outperforming men? And one of the reasons surely is that, and it's completely politically incorrect to say this, but as you know, I've never shrunk from that before, so I might as well go way out on a limb and just say, you know, it takes men longer to grow up than it takes women. Women mature faster in just about any way that you can think of. And so unless men have a real serious reason to finish school and settle down and get a job and all that kind of stuff, you know, they tend not to do it. And women can sit down and fold their hands and be in a schoolroom, you know, starting like in age six. Girls are doing that better than guys are doing it. And so what we've done here is by kind of taking away the incentives for men to contribute to the household, it's women who are getting the bum deal in marriage. What's the guy bring to the table? He won't grow up. He insists on 5 or 10 years worth of contraceptive sex before we can even think about having a baby. Why should I get married to a guy like that, you know? So this is the kind of dynamic that has gotten into place that our poor feminist friends just haven't thought about. They haven't thought about what is it going to look like when you tell men that they don't really have to do anything because a woman's going to do everything for herself. You've changed a lot of dynamics here, and I think it's really questionable whether we're going to be happy with this in the end.
Is there a problem brewing down the road? And that is, okay, no matter how long they want to defer childbirth, they're eventually going to want to have kids. Most will. And I'm just trying to do the math here. If the wife is the primary breadwinner, and the husband learns to depend upon that, I guess there's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. But when it's time to have kids, she is the one who's got the job of having the kids. I mean, she does have to give birth. He can't do that for her. Therefore, she leaves. Even the very best leave situation will probably leave them without some income. And then there's a disadvantage to the wife being the primary breadwinner if she wants to spend any time at all at home with those kids.
Well, it is a little awkward because, you know, the economic sense says to make have the lower income spouse stay home. That's what the economics would tell you. But a lot of people's kind of biological sense doesn't quite work like that. Now, I have to say, Todd, that a solidly married couple with a good, solid relationship of mutual respect, they can make it work with the husband staying home. I know several families that do that. And as long as the wife and husband respect one another, it can work, and they can make it work. The problem comes in if the wife starts to lose respect for her husband, you know, if she's off at a, you know, some kind of high-powered job, and of course the men she comes in contact with are also high-powered guys, and those guys start to look more appealing to her than the guy she's left at home, you know, that kind of dynamic, of course that can happen, obviously that happens with men as well, but I think there's a special pull that women almost, women tend to gravitate towards people who can provide for them. I mean, there is this biological pull towards looking for a good provider. The evolutionary biologists talk about this all the time, the different ways in which women are impressed with guys that they think can bring resources to the table for themselves and their young. And so, you know, we don't want to completely write off the biological pull that does seem to have a hold on us. But having said that, I absolutely support any couple that is, you know, that feels that this is the arrangement they want to make, then that they should do it, and they can do it. They can make it work. But I think there are some pitfalls there, and we shouldn't go at this so casually, you know, to think that it'll all be fine. You know, as long as the feminists are happy, everybody's going to be happy. Yeah, I don't think so.
With only about 20 seconds here, are you still blogging about the federal legal challenge to Prop 8 in California?
I have been. Yes, I have been. I've been talking about it all last week, and I'll have a few more things to say about it today, as a matter of fact.
Folks, you can stay updated on the legal battle over California's same-sex marriage ban by reading Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse's blog. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. We'll have a link to the Ruth Institute at our website as well. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend the remainder of this hour with Dr. Andrew Steinman. About a year ago, there was a discovery. I believe it was a shard of pottery. Such things have a tendency to last, dating way, way back. The earliest known example of Hebrew writing. Now, this is significant for Old Testament scholarship because when Hebrew script comes into being, when this language itself is in use, says a lot about the age of the Old Testament. Some would allege with the discovery of this earliest known example of Hebrew writing, maybe the Old Testament was written a long time before liberal Bible scholarship would suggest. We'll talk more about that with Dr. Andrew Steinman right after this. Stay tuned.
Sugar mama with a whole lot of zeros and commas. Don't really care if she loves me. She can even be ugly. I'm gonna marry for money.
If you're a pastor or layperson in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we have some timely resources for you. The leadership of the LCMS is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. You'll find show transcripts about these proposed changes and an updated list of questions for President Gerald Kishnick's task force. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen on Demand page and click Share This.
Have you heard of the CLCC, the Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission? We're deeply involved in providing seminars to build up Christ's church with education and training for the laity. So far, we've held seminars on confessional topics at churches in Minnesota, Utah, Oregon, and Washington, and planning is underway to hold seminars in several other states coast to coast. Visit theclcc.org. Check us out. Get on the mailing list, or better yet, join us. See how your church can host a seminar, too. Go to theclcc.org.